systematically. And these kinds of abuses are not only a problem, you know, simply in human rights terms for the people affected, but they are also contributing to Kenya's security crisis. And this links back to President Obama's visit, because the United States, of course, is a very important partner for Kenya on security, on a whole range of issues. And President Obama's visit, of course, is a prime opportunity for the U.S. government to be stressing that human rights must be guiding the response to the security crisis, and that there is no contradiction between maintaining security and improving security and protecting the human rights of Kenyan citizens.
And is it your sense that not just in Kenya but in other parts of Africa that sectarian violence is increasing?
Well, I think there are certainly groups that are increasingly trying to widen fissures between ethnic and religious groups. I think we see that in Nigeria. I think we certainly see that in Kenya. Al-Shabaab is trying to exploit these differences. Al-Shabaab is exploiting these differences. And instead of
Lesa Lefko, we're going to have to leave it there, but I thank you very much for being with us. Deputy Director of Human Rights Watch's Africa Division. We'll link to your report on the in 2014 that looked at killings and disappearances by anti-terror police in Kenya. That does it for our broadcast. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Our website's democracynow.org. Thanks so much for joining us.
You are listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO is a proud co-sponsor of the 4th Annual Umbrella Festival of Circus and Comedy, April 2nd to April 5th at the Alberta Rose Theater. 4 nights of entertainment, including outsider music legend Artist the Spoon Man, 9 traveling circus troupes, acrobats and aerialists, clowns and cabaret, bands and burlesque, drag and daring do, and more. Again, that's the 4th Annual Umbrella Festival of Circus and Comedy, April 2nd through April 5th at the Alberta Rose Theater, 3000 Northeast Alberta Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
We're at the Erez Crossing, which is where you enter Gaza from. So apparently, when you go into Gaza, you have to walk until you get to the first town there. And apparently that walk is very dangerous.
KBOO is a proud co-sponsor of Indigenous Rights, Palestine, and Academic Freedom. Thursday, April 9th at 6:30 p.m. at Portland State University's Smith Center, room 338. Guest speaker will be Stephen Saleta, former Virginia Tech professor. That's Indigenous Rights, Palestine, and Academic Freedom, sponsored by Students United for Palestinian Equal Rights, on Thursday, April 9th, 6:30 p.m. at Portland State University, Smith Center, room 338. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
What would you have instead?
This is it.
Comes a time when every second, every day, when every action, every thought will tell the world how you cast your vote.
Thank you.
are listening to your community radio station, KBOO Portland. It is 4 minutes after 8 o'clock in the morning, maybe 5 minutes after 8 o'clock in the morning now.
Who's counting at this hour?
You know. And if you're off by a minute, what does that say about how you're organizing your life?
Welcome to my car clock.
Anyways, you're listening to Positively Revolting on your community radio station. I'm Ani.
I'm Lynn.
And together, in fact, we are positively revolting, and we hope you are too. So this morning, there's a lot to get revolting over. So we're going to turn our attention once again to Indiana and once again to the war on women. This time, we're looking at the facet of reproductive rights and the criminalization of pregnant women, sort of a continuation of the Christian extremism that we started discussing last week as we saw Indiana's passage of the Freedom for Religion. Freedom from religion. No, that wasn't freedom. It's that religious thing with the Christian jihadists, let's face facts, that called by any other name is enacting Christian doctrine on the rest of us.
It's the usual, think of the opposite of what the actual name of the bill is, and you will have what it's about.
Doublespeak. Mm-hmm. George Orwell, he had it going
Bizarro
on.
Bizarro Land.
So this,
if you're a comic book fan.
That's true. Bizarro Land also works. 1984 Bizarro Land, you know. Mm-hmm. So many cultural references for this time of insanity. This week saw the first woman actually charged, convicted, and sentenced under a state so-called feticide law.
Feticide!
She received a 20-year sentence. 20-year sentence.
Well, it wasn't just feticide.
Well, her crime, according to the state, she delivered a live birth and abandoned the very prematurely delivered infant before seeking medical care for heavy
fetus
bleeding. It, again, according to the state, if it's born alive,
they don't know.
Well, they don't. But that's sort of the point here. The
but
state says
matter, yeah,
that the woman, whose name is Purvi Patel, ordered abortion drugs online and that she neglected the dependent, causing its death. Now, according to Patel and her lawyers, she miscarried the pregnancy. The fetus was delivered stillborn by Patel, and she then sought medical care for heavy bleeding.
She thought she went to bed with cramps, thought it was indigestion, and they had her on the phone talking about ordering drugs. No one knows if she did.
Exactly. And in fact, state toxicology reports showed negative for abortion drugs in her system. And yet, this is still a part of the state's case against her. Huh. This case is significant. As when states have passed these feticide laws, they've claimed that the laws would not be used against women who were seeking medical care, but in fact were targeting others, protecting women. They were targeting those who would harm the fetus through acts of violence against the woman herself or by terminating the pregnancy through an illegal abortion, thereby shutting down shady, illegal abortionists, which really aren't necessary because abortion still hypothetically legal in this country. But we move on from that rather fine point, apparently. Actually, there's been 130 laws that passed in the 90s restricting abortion access.
100 and how many?
130 in the 90s. 189 restrictive laws were passed in the first decade of the aughts, 2000 to 2010. That's more by, you know, about, call it 50, than in the previous decade. Now, in the last 3 years, and not really the last 3 years, but from 2011 to 2013, 205 laws were passed that restrict access to abortions in some ways. 70 of those restrictions were enacted in 2013 alone. And as Lynn and I talked about in January, the legislative session that started this year was just off and running from the gate in restricting abortion access. So we're looking at really having pretty much a record-setting year in this area.
Wee-haw.
It's not the area I want to be setting records in, right? 12 states have bans on abortions after 20 weeks. You know, since we did pass Roe, you know, 43 years ago, we cannot ban abortion in this country, but we can restrict the living daylights out of it.
Oh, wait, and we can have it be just for rich people.
Oh, we can absolutely have that. So 12 states have bans on abortions after 20 weeks. 24 states have excluded any abortion services in state health coverage. There we go with that. You got to be rich to access health services. These laws are not helping women. These laws are enforcing an incubation status on actual adult human beings of, you know, fully fledged and independent natures. Again, defending the so-called rights of a fetus or embryo beyond that of an adult woman. This is not good, to say the least. So we're going to be talking about the law in Indiana. We're going to be talking about the case of Purvi Patel, and we want your calls, dear listener, to join in this conversation at 503-231-8187. 503-231-8187. We also encourage you to find us on Facebook, Positively Revolting. You can also follow us on Twitter at Positive Revolt. There is a lot going on, actually, in the Twitterverse in response to this story. It's pretty significant.
Which we broke last week, I
sure,
might add.
Sure. Before it even happened. What?
No.
Okay, so but I'm just going to say that it's a very significant case. Again, the first time a woman has been sentenced under a feticide law. That is horrifying. Really,
not just
nothing
feticide,
short.
But child endangerment, which her attorney thought, how can you do both? And apparently the judge, who was appointed by the good governor, Mike Pence, and the jury, but the judge in particular who ruled on that, said that, of course, you can be tried on both of those, which completely makes the top of my head blow off. And I'm sure the attorney felt extremely frustrated,
I'm
as
sure.
Ms. Patel as well.
Well, and so she was sentenced for 10 years for feticide and 20 years for neglect of a dependent causing its death. So the 10-year feticide sentence was actually suspended, and she's serving 20 for the neglect.
Now, my own little thought on that is, this is going to set a precedent for when the big debate about when life starts.
And in fact, so there are currently 38 states that have fetal homicide laws. I'm very happy to say Oregon is not one of them. The states include Alabama, Alaska, Arizona, Arkansas, California, Colorado, Florida, Georgia, Idaho, Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Kansas, Kentucky, Louisiana, Maine, Maryland, Massachusetts, Michigan, Minnesota, Mississippi, Nebraska, Nevada, North Carolina, North Dakota, Ohio, Oklahoma, Pennsylvania, Rhode Island, South Carolina, South Dakota, Tennessee, Texas, Utah, Virginia, Washington, West Virginia, and Wisconsin. At least 23 of these states have fetal homicide laws that apply to the earliest stages of pregnancy, otherwise known as any state of gestation, conception, fertilization, or post-fertilization. I'm going to just jump down to Kansas's law, which when I read different parts of it this morning, made me scream out loud. Yes, I did. I screamed out loud at my house before dawn. I apologize now to my housemates. Kansas's law, it's statute 21-5419, called Alexa's Law, defines a, quote, unborn child as a living individual organism of the species Homo sapiens in utero at any stage of gestation from fertilization to birth. The law specifies that person and human being shall also mean an unborn child as used in the Kansas statutes, which define murder in the first and second degrees, voluntary and involuntary manslaughter, battery, aggravated battery, etc. and involuntary manslaughter while driving under the influence of alcohol or drugs.
Involuntary conception?
Any state of fertilization.
Apparently so.
So I'm just going to go ahead as somebody who used to be a lay medical health worker and say most pregnancies in a spontaneous miscarriage.
Otherwise known as a period.
Otherwise known as a period.
Menstruation.
Before a woman is aware that she is pregnant, most pregnancies, sort of end. It's one of those things. It's a part of the cycle, as it were. Okay, I'm not going to scream into the microphone. That's bad. That would hurt. And we're not going to do that.
Well, last year we saw people being, this is the first time someone has been convicted, but arrested for miscarrying. This is way past Handmaid's Tale.
Yes, I encourage people run out and grab The Handmaid's Tale today.
Why can't I remember her name?
Margaret Atwood.
Thank you. I adore her. Margaret Atwood. Go read that, because we're almost in the middle of it.
Because we're there, really. We're there. So let's go ahead. We do have listeners lining up to call. We want to talk with you. We want to encourage public discourse. We want to hear your thoughts, your opinions this morning. 503-231-8187. Good morning, John. You're on the air.
Good morning. Love the program, and I'm a proud member, long-time member of KBOO, and keep up the great work. And as men and women of wanting human rights and equal rights for women all over the world and women's control of their own fertility, I think this would be a great time, since we're coming up on the 2016 election here pretty soon, and it'll be a biggie. And I think that, and I've done this before, getting specifically women to register to vote, because women are more apt to vote center to the left because they have us human beings, and they love their kids, and I think that they can be swayed to protect their rights, and so tie it in with voting. And if we have to, I think we ought to go door to door in neighborhoods and bring Planned Parenthood brochures and voter registration and try to talk to the women specifically, because you are a majority of the population.
It's true.
So, yeah, there you go. You've got your work cut out for you, John.
Yeah, right. Great show, and keep up the great work, and we've got to keep fighting. It's always a war, isn't it?
It always is. And, I want to have some peace in my life. I don't know. Just one of those things.
It's going to have to be from within.
We got
to
do it peacefully, hopefully, through the voting.
Wow. All right. Thank you very much.
Take care and keep up the great work.
All right.
Thank you for listening. Bye-bye.
Cheers. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. One aspect of this case that I'm finding particularly disturbing is Purvi Patel is the first woman to be sentenced under Indiana's feticide laws, but she was not actually the first woman to be charged. In 2011, Bei Bei Shui, a Chinese-American woman, was held in prison for a year.
Do you get a pattern here?
Before feticide charges against her were dropped as part of a plea deal. Shui was reportedly suffering from depression and tried to commit suicide while pregnant. She survived, but the fetus did not. Instead of receiving medical support and counseling Shui needed, the state charged her with murder and attempted feticide. So, again, as Lynn was just pointing out, there does seem to be a bit of a pattern. That is, immigrant women of color, such as Bei Bei and Purvi, remain especially vulnerable to the laws like these feticide laws. There are many issues involved. Lynn has her finger in the air. Go ahead, Lynn.
Well, this brings us to the topic of class, which is one of the great ways to chip away at women's reproductive rights by budgeting them away. There's an article I was reading in the ACLU blog about this stuff, and it says, for women who are struggling to make ends meet, insurance coverage can mean the difference between getting the care they need and going without. In real terms, that means that one in four Medicaid-eligible women who seek an abortion are forced to carry their pregnancy to term.
Yep. It's true.
And because it does, this ends up boiling down to class in the end as well.
Deepa Iyer, who is an activist in residence at the University of Maryland's Asian American Studies program, notes a couple of major problems. As I was just reading, it's actually a start of a quote from Deepa Iyer. Immigrant women of color remain vulnerable to the exploitation of these laws in myriad ways, as we've seen how they've been treated by the state of Indiana. She goes on to say that the cultural issues that the prosecution decided to drag into this case reflect stereotypes about Asian American women and reproductive health, which may not necessarily be true in this case. The Journal of Health Politics, this is actually from an MSNBC article, the Journal of Health Politics, Policy and Law's 2013 study on arrests and forced interventions on pregnant women in the U.S. found that approximately 71% of the women who had forced interventions pregnancies, that's a phrase, 71% were low-income women and 59% were women of color. Huh.
As I said, see a pattern?
I don't know what you're talking about, Lynn. It's merely the state's interest in protecting the unborn.
Silly me.
Apoplectic again. That's me, apoplectic again. So let's go ahead and talk to Doug. Good morning, Doug. You're on the air.
Good morning. I am highly concerned about this whole problem. When I was in college, I ended up being the escort for many people for a two-hour drive to the local nearest provider.
Abortion services provider, yeah.
Yeah, and being a four-hour lay counselor for these women was disastrous to my brain. I mean, it was half a dozen times just because I was available. But the question that comes to my mind is fertility services could be totally devastated by the fact that somebody fertilizes 10 eggs and implants 5, and all of a sudden they got 15 charges of feticide.
Oh, yeah, I see what you mean. You're talking about, yeah, it's an interesting take on it.
In vitro fertilization.
Right.
There is some controversy about that these days.
Indeed.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and then, of course, the implantation.
Aren't those the snowflake babies?
One becomes viable.
No.
So here there are 19 feticide charges available.
Right. Yeah.
For the outcome is a perfectly healthy child, and yet there are 19 charges made.
Could. I mean, you're talking in the realm of hypothetical right now, though.
Yeah.
I understand the hypothetical, and I think that it is concerning. But right now, I'm really super concerned about the fact that Purvi Patel is serving 20-year sentence.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
and so this is like an actual woman who has just been sentenced for 20 years on Monday of this week. And looking at a pattern of other women having forced interventions in their pregnancies and facing basically the criminalization of a health condition.
Right.
And I get how the two are related, but I have to say, at this moment, my outrage is going towards the fact that women are being criminalized for
absolutely.
Basically, you know, living and being fertile. So,
absolutely.
But yeah, I think you raise a very good point.
and she should not be for a standard health issue.
Yeah, that's it's pretty horrifying, huh?
So, I mean, what is this actually, the implications of this are huge for women who are having complications of pregnancy. Are women going to feel safe going to their doctor and discussing complications of pregnancy?
Or, once again, I will say it depends on their class.
Yeah, and I agree with you, Lynn. I absolutely, you know, if you have a good health insurance and a good relationship with your doctor, then yeah, you're probably safe. If
or your religion.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Indiana also has the law about freedom of religion in your workplace. Well, perhaps as a housewife, your workplace allows you to define. You get to stand up at some point during the day to clean your house, and you're endangering your child.
It goes on and on. It goes on and on.
Thank you very much for your call this morning, Doug.
Okay. Thank you.
Bye. Bye-bye. All right. There's so much to consider.
But let's let people know who and what we are. We are Positively Revolting. This is KBOO in Portland. You are listening to us this morning, and we hope you are calling with. We are talking about the war on women, reproductive rights, the criminalization of miscarriage, I guess you could say. That's one of the topics. Give us a call, 503-231-8187. I would love to hear from some women this morning. I'm happy to have male callers. I'm happy to have all the callers we have, but I'd love, this issue boils down to women, and I'd love to hear from some. Or contact us on Facebook at Positively Revolting, Twitter at Positively Revolt, and
Positive
Revolt. Didn't I say that? Yeah, whatever. And Gmail at positivelyrevolting@gmail.com. Those are all the many, many ways you may contact us this morning. It's a huge topic. We revisit it all the time because more horrors keep coming on down the line. And I try to look at this stuff all the time, so it's not surprising as much to me. But I was talking to a bunch of people yesterday in my work, and they were like, "What?
Yeah.
What? Are you kidding me?
This can't have happened.
This can't have happened." So, we're going to keep doing this until we need to not do it anymore. And hopefully that'll be tomorrow, but I don't think so.
Oh, yeah. From your mouth to the goddess's ear, Lynn, let us achieve this by tomorrow.
So when I said snowflake children, those are, there's a whole group of folks that adopt the embryos, have them implanted, that people don't want anymore because we don't want to waste an embryo.
I see.
Because God knows.
Okay, we'll talk.
Because we need more.
We'll talk later. Coming up this morning on KBOO at 9 o'clock, APA Compass, a forum for dialogue, exploration, and dissemination of issues pertinent to the APA communities. At 10 o'clock, stay tuned for Air Cascadia headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15, on Flashpoints, tests, cheating, and educational corruption, Bob Schaefer of Fairtest says that the Atlanta cheating scandal is only the tip of the iceberg, and presidential candidate Governor Scott Walker of Wisconsin denies his responsibility to safeguard health care for more than 180,000 Wisconsin residents.
Liar.
And on 11 o'clock, on the Radio Zine, we'll hear a panel from the Public Interest Environmental Law Conference at the recent Supreme Court of Canada's decision in the Tsikotin Nation versus British Columbia's decision, which empowered First Nations people seeking to assert title over traditional territories. We thank KBOO members for your great support. You, in fact, allow us to be independent and on the air. If you are not a member, please take care of that little situation right now. You can become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate Today. So much to discuss.
You know, there's another issue about this, and a lot of research that I was doing, it was all about the Republicans, and God knows they're right up front with it. But our good friend Katha Pollitt, columnist for The Nation magazine, who we interviewed about a book
just a couple months ago,
just
really,
a couple
just like
months
4 months
ago.
Ago.
And what was the name of the book? Oh. We're going to get that in a second. But one of the things she talks about is the apologist view on the farther left side of politics about, well, abortions should be few and far between. And, you know, that's the issue is it's a medical procedure women should have upon demand. That was settled at one point. Apparently not quite so rock solidly. But that's another part that politically is sort of helping to ease in less funding for Planned Parenthood for Medicare, Medicaid, for women to receive the health care that they need and want.
It's true. Katha Pollitt's book that was released in the fall is called Pro. Reclaiming abortion rights.
That was easy. Wonder why I didn't remember that.
No, in my head it was abortion on demand. And I knew that
it was one word.
Yeah, I knew it was a little more succinct than abortion on demand.
Anyway, it's a great book. We highly recommend it.
It's true. I highly recommend Katha Pollitt. In
any
general.
Way, shape, or form, yes.
All right. So we are looking at feticide. We are looking at the criminalization of pregnancy and the fact that most states have feticide laws. Get familiar with them. In fact, I've always been a little horrified to say, to see and to say that actually in some instances, women's rights advocates have advocated for feticide laws as really, they promise they won't actually be used against the pregnant woman. They promise
How does that work exactly?
Just be used against, say, a battering partner or, you know, some other force, you know, unethical abortionists that are providing services outside the law, a partner, husband, a boyfriend that batters the woman into a miscarriage, you know, something like that. That's what those laws are for. They're going to protect the woman.
Well, and remember, we have something that shuts things down if we've been raped. Well, and then let alone the definition of rape that's being...
There's all of that. But I wanted to, get back to some basics. And this is where I depart hugely from liberal feminists, who often I have found in my work seem to be very short-sighted in how they believe laws will help women. I look at the Canadian anti-porn laws, which made it illegal for pornography to depict the degradation or violence against women. Immediately, that law, as soon as it was enacted, was turned against gay and lesbian bookstores because of BDSM erotica. Those were the first cases under that law that were tried. But that's not what it was for. I don't get it. How is it that it's kind of like the laws don't really want to empower us. How does that happen with illegals? I don't get. So when I was working at the abortion services provider, there was a lawsuit that enacted RICO. It was a racketeering lawsuit to bring a suit against Operation Rescue and other radical anti-choice groups, organizations, and protesters under the grounds that they were attempting to shut down businesses, right? It's an anti-racketeering law that, again, we... And when I say we, I'm going to go ahead and exclude myself, that many people in that field thought would provide relief for our services against the protesters. But again, those are the same laws that we found turned against environmentalists who tried to use boycott and direct action tactics against you know, furriers and different environmental, you know, logging industry, that sort of thing, environmental destroyers.
So you're saying we have a zeitgeist problem.
I'm saying that if we actually expect repressive laws to help us, we need therapy. That's what I'm saying. Okay.
In South Dakota, a bill was proposed to make it legal to murder a doctor who provides abortion care. This is an interesting way of getting around Roe v. Wade, I find.
Yes, that's one way to get around it.
I'm sorry, it's not funny. We're just doing this.
It's gallows humor because I cannot believe what is actually going on out there.
And then there was in Maryland, they ended all county money for low-income kids preschool program. Why? Because women should really be home with the kids, not out working. Some women would probably like to be, except they'd like to eat also.
Yeah, something about food and shelter.
Something about food and shelter.
Go
or dad's
figure.
Being home. But, yeah.
Details. So with all that said, let's go ahead and talk to Marion. Good morning, Marion. You're on the air.
Good morning, Ani and Lynn.
We have no rant control. Sorry.
I'm not sure I remember what I was going to say. But, of course, this is a... I am a woman, and this is a... This conversation is very intrinsic to my being and to all women. What is really... I'm having a real struggle with wrapping this around my brain, all of it. It's just not going to happen. It's not going to get wrapped around my brain, is the dichotomy in this culture. We have a woman going to prison for 20 years for attempting to take care of herself, and there's a man in this city who is getting to go to work, get up and go to work every single day. He doesn't have to skip a beat, and he's responsible for the death of his little girl that he left in his car for 6 hours. And he is, nothing going to happen to him. His life isn't going to change. It seems to me that men, that in Europe, in England, isn't it true that that these kinds of crimes are separated out? There's these kinds of women and children crimes are completely separated out from the rest of the litany of crimes, and they're dealt with completely separate from the court system.
I don't know.
Yeah, they are dealt with completely separate. These need to be dealt with completely separate, and it is not a part for the course of a regular crime. It is nothing to do with burglary and
I see what you're talking about.
All the other capitalist crimes that many people are finding themselves in, white and blue collar and everything else. But
right.
this is something for women to deal with. Women, men do not have anything to do with this. They need to keep out of it altogether. There needs to be a women's court. Women deal with women's issues. The first thing that AA did was separate the women from the men. The women sponsored women. Men sponsor men. There isn't no men sponsoring women and women sponsoring men. It is strengthening the women and strengthening the men with women and men doing each of their own. And then they come back together again.
Uh-huh.
This culture needs to really, really ripen the women in its culture. The men aren't going to do it for us. They think their job is to keep us down.
Well, some,
and
yeah.
We need to separate it out. This needs to come out of the court system into a separate court area altogether. Women deal with women. And that man, something needs to happen to him. He needs to have an altercation in his life. He needs to have some... This woman is being, used as, an example for all the rest of us. And if that's true, this man, too, he's been used as an example for all the other men. It's okay. You can abandon your children, but let a woman do it and see what happens to her. And
right.
That's all I have to say at the moment. It's just overwhelming.
Marion, thank you very much for your call.
Kill his child, be responsible for the murder of his little girl.
Thank you. Thank you very much for your call this morning.
I have to say, I'm not familiar with the case you're talking about, for Portland, but thank you very much for your call. I want to turn attention to Think Progress, the website thinkprogress.org. There's an article, Pricing American Women Out of Abortion, One Restriction at a Time, that is an excellent article about how access to abortion has been ever more restricted through forced waiting laws and, of course, the defunding of abortion from many insurances and certainly through any public pay.
And whatever kind of humiliation women can be put through, like what was the thing in Texas where they got to have a vaginal ultrasound beforehand, and yes, waiting laws, as you said, guilty counseling.
I'm gonna go ahead and quote from this article. Excuse me. In Wisconsin, for example, women are legally mandated to have an in-person counseling session with a doctor who must show them illustrations of a fetus at various stages of pregnancy. The state requires them to have a mandatory ultrasound. Their doctor must also show and describe those images to them. After that initial consultation, they must wait at least 24 hours before they're allowed to return to clinic.
Because they're too stupid to know what they want. That's the thing. We'll just show them because they can't get these pictures on their own or know.
Certainly women what they want. Can't they're... possibly access information or
have an idea about what they want.
No. This requirement, known as an enforced waiting period, has dramatically increased the burden on women in the state, according to Nora Cusick. She's the treasurer of the Women's Medical Fund, a nonprofit organization that assists Wisconsin residents who need help paying for abortion services and helps to fund more than 700 procedures annually. She says, while 26 states across the country have some type of waiting period in place, Wisconsin is just one of 11 that stipulates the initial counseling session must take place in person, which requires patients to make two separate trips to the clinic. For women who are geographically isolated from abortion providers, this requirement means they must make two round trips or plan on an overnight stay in a nearby hotel. Now, if in fact you are poor, that's a problem. Hotels don't come cheap. And what are you going to do if you happen to have other family members that you're supposed to be taking care of? There's a bit of a burden there. So how does that all work? There are several states that require at least two trips to an abortion clinic. Wisconsin. There's Louisiana, there's Texas, there's Arizona, there's Utah. Tons would be a fair statement. Actually, probably not tons. We're talking about 10. But still, that's a significant amount, especially in states like Texas, where we have seen abortion clinics closed across the state, and you have to drive hours. To get to a clinic if you happen to be one of those geographically remote people. Anyways, that's from thinkprogress.org. It's called Pricing American Women Out of Abortion, One Restriction at a Time. We will post that on our Facebook page. It is an excellent article. Avail thyself.
I know. It's starting to feel all biblical. Well, the bases are pretty loaded here. Let us go back to the phone lines. Helen.
Hello, this is Leah.
Oh, hi, Leah.
Oh, sorry,
hi.
Leah.
I'm doing fine. The previous caller hit on something that I remember from my, when back in the 70s when we first began fighting for abortion rights and equal rights. One of the things she said was that this male has no consequences for his action. And I remember many of our circles, women said, if I'm responsible for my egg, he's responsible for his sperm. Where's the issue here? Why isn't he stepping up to fight? Why isn't he being held responsible? So I had a talk with my current partner about this. And, you know, it's like, oh, it's not his problem. It's her problem. She didn't do the right thing. She didn't get support. It was up to her to get support. It's like, no, just... blindness, doesn't see. And the other thing is, I'm so angry and outraged about this because I'm reminded of what went on in the burning times. Many things like this were used against women. It was an excuse to put them to the stake and torture them. So this is the same kind of stuff, and it was religion again, in the name of God and the church and all that BS. So here we are again doing the exact same thing, and it's males doing it. And, you know, these, you know, if you can get pregnant, you know, tell me when you had your last period, and, you know, have you been through menopause? Do you know what it's like to carry a child, to lose a child, to go through, you know, then you have nothing to say. I'm just so outraged.
Join you in your outrage, Leah. Thank you very much for your call this morning.
Yes, thanks. Bye-bye.
Now we're going to go to Helen.
Good morning, Helen. You're on the air.
Hi. I just want to update you in the case of the man from Intel.
I didn't know anything about that. Do you know?
Oh, it happened, I don't know, some time ago. And okay. What happened is that this couple came from Massachusetts, and they hadn't been here for a long time, and he forgot about his child. Well, it all went away, and they decided that it wasn't because of the heat in the car. The temperature, though, was 70 degrees. So a few days ago, I decided, you know, I'm going to try to figure this out. So the case was in Hillsboro, and I called because I wanted to talk to the district attorney, and they said, well, you can leave a message, but he probably won't get back to you because you're not related to the family, and there's not a number for the case. And then I looked at the article this lady had written in the Oregonian about it, and I called her twice. To try to, like, you know, check, why don't they go deeper in this? Because he got nothing happened to him. And part of the thing about the child dying is, well, the child was sitting a certain way in the car and might not have been able to breathe well. But the other thing is, earlier the child had gone in for shots for who knows what, you know what I mean? Like,
I'm going to go ahead and encourage you to hurry on through this because we have a lot of other folks.
But, you know, it could have also been a reaction to some sort of shot that the child had to have, too. So I think it's a bigger case, and they're just hiding it under a rock, and I'm extremely disappointed and have nowhere to turn.
Huh. Okay. Well, thank you very much for that. More things for us to look into.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Thanks very much, Helen. Take good care. And Francis, good morning, Francis. Let's go ahead and get you on the air. Good morning, Francis.
Hi there.
Hello.
Hi. I remember that incident a little bit, and I remember thinking at the time, how could anybody forget that they had left their child in the car for 6 hours?
It's a Liechtenstein picture.
I can see maybe 5 minutes, 10 minutes, but 6 hours just seems really crazy. But anyway, that's beside the point. I'm concerned about this young woman who apparently was afraid of her family, and I'm hoping that she's getting some support from her family and that women in the prison, wherever she goes, will support her because she needs it right now.
Absolutely.
And I am also constantly amazed at the people who make these laws, who find no problem with cutter bombs cutting up babies all over the world. That's okay for some reason. There's no problem with
that's
that
to
whatsoever.
Keep us safe.
Oh, okay. To keep
what
us
are you
safe
thinking,
so
Francis?
We can do this.
Yeah.
So we can do this to a young woman.
Right.
You know, I don't get it, but I never will. So.
And that's a good thing. You don't want to. The second that starts making sense to you,
but
it's a problem.
As soon as these people are making these laws, and they're always used the wrong way. I can remember when they had those landlord laws, that, you know, the new chronic nuisance ordinance in Northeast Portland, where it was supposed to be, you know, if things happened at your house, then they would put a lien on your property and things.
Yep.
That was for absentee landlords. They used it on grandma.
Absolutely.
Children may have gotten involved in drugs or something.
Absolutely.
So I'm tired of these kind of laws, and I really want to send out some energy to this young woman who's going to need a whole lot of support right now.
Thank you very much for bringing that up.
Are they appealing this at all?
You know, it needs to be appealed. It needs to be appealed. Yeah, I have not heard about an appeal. I've had two listeners have written to us this morning to ask if it's going to be appealed.
Yeah.
It needs to be. I can only imagine it will be because it is such a landmark case. But I have not heard about
it. And the
an
two
appeal.
Charges are two they don't make sense.
They don't make sense.
Well, that's what her attorneys tried to say. So
then the judge needs to be looked at.
Yeah, big time.
All right. Well,
thank you so much, Francis. You too. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. We encourage you to follow along on Facebook, Positively Revolting. I have a new goal in life. Okay, maybe it's just a goal for this month, but I want to see us get to like 525.
All right.
Likes
Help
on
us
our
get
Facebook
there,
page.
Folks. Help us
We're
get
close.
There.
We're at 517. We thank you all who have, in fact, chosen the path of following us on Facebook and being able to continue these conversations throughout the week, staying in touch through articles and comments, and actually building a little community online. You can also follow along on Twitter at Positive Revolt. I do more Twitter. Lynn does more Facebook. Together, we are social media neophytes and really trying to figure this stuff out. Meanwhile, back at the ranch, you can give us a call, 503-231-8187, just like Kenneth has done. Good morning, Kenneth.
Good morning. Thanks for the opportunity to get on this call.
Sure.
What an emotional topic, but I don't know if you said this morning what the charge was that's sending this woman to prison now. I heard that hit her for 20 years.
Yes, in fact, we did. It was neglect of a dependent.
And feticide. Two charges.
Well, feticide, she got a suspended sentence on.
Oh, okay.
But the 20 years serving is for neglect of a dependent.
Too interesting.
Of the defendant?
Dependent.
Dependent, otherwise known as the stillborn.
Oh, okay. Well, that's...
So apparently you're supposed to carry it around with you.
That is. And then I heard from your cohort there on this show.
Which one of us is the cohort?
A crime being committed. Well, no, and in truth, there is no crime if there is no injury to one whereby the injury was caused with intent.
Neither of us said it was a crime.
Indeed.
Neither of us said it.
In fact,
I just want to be clear about that.
And I want to say the only crime being committed here is, in fact, sentencing a woman for 20 years for having a miscarriage.
If that wasn't clear, we apologize, but that's...
And let us be very clear.
Yeah.
Well, and then I heard something about RICO, and the only true RICO is going
Never
on.
Said anything.
I said something
you
about
did?
RICO.
Okay, yep. That cohort said something about RICO.
Yeah, I was
just give my opinion on that word, RICO. The only RICO that I feel is going on is with the attorneys or the Oregon Bar Association in its court process. And then I just want to say, with this man, and I don't know if I heard that he has some connection to Intel, and then I don't know what this connection's, what this...
I know.
So I'm just going to go ahead and cut to the chase. If you don't know any of the stuff, I'm just what's your point this morning, sir?
Okay. It's simple. Again, it's slavery in its form in all of its sophisticated forms, covered up with different words. And then two, you know, this man might be connected with Intel, so that speaks to why he's not, even going to be. You know, there's no accountability there for his misbehaving, but, did he leave the child in the car on purpose for 6 hours? I mean, what happened? And we don't know. And this is where my things...
That was not what the show's about. What we're talking about
is... It's kind of tangential, and I know that call went on for a long time, but that's kind of not what the show is about, and because we don't know enough about it. And
really what we're focusing on here is the criminalization of women who are pregnant and treating those pregnancies, really treating the grown adult, fully fledged human women as incubators for an embryo that may or may not develop into a fully fledged human. That's what we're actually trying to talk about this morning.
Okay, and to get to the crux of that and all women being persecuted by something like this, it's challenged the subject matter jurisdiction. Read the statutes and find out in the definitions section it doesn't apply to any of us. You know, we're people, and what used to apply to us was the common law. So if we could get back to that, there's a beautiful organization forming all around the country. It's called National Liberty Alliance, And its one and sole purpose is to bring back cognitive awareness to we the people so that we understand the grand jury process, and that unless we the people, the fifth branch or the fourth branch of government, have access to that court system and controlling the grand jury process, this is what we're going to continually face on a daily basis.
All right. Well, thank you so much for that.
That's a very fine point, Kenneth. Thank you very much.
And we are going on 503-231-8187.
We're almost running out of show, but we can take Linda real fast.
Just a moment left. Yes. Good morning, Linda. You're on the air.
Yeah. Hi. I have a positively revolting comment, but some people say that if men could get pregnant, abortion would be a sacrament.
Yes. I used to have that bumper sticker.
All right. That's all I got.
Thank you. Thank you very much for that. You know, for me, this goes right back to the slogan from the 70s, because everything old is new again. You know, women are not incubators. Embryos are not children, right? This is basic. And I got to say, abortion on demand, without apology, no excuses, because it's a medical service. And women, really, we need to control our destinies. Call it one of those privileges one gets with being a human being in a country that has rights. For I'm getting into trouble here, obviously, because the laws in this country really are no longer treating women as independent human beings. When we have over half of the states with feticide laws, what does that mean? What does that mean? What does that mean to women who are having drug dependency issues? What does that mean to women who did not realize they were pregnant and continue taking prescribed medications that may have contraindications for pregnancy, that may have teratogenic effect?
So there's no funding for that woman to have a medical procedure that's called an abortion, but we will spend a gazillion dollars on
locking her up.
Yeah, well, not just locking her up, but say she gives birth to this child that has going to take tons and tons and tons of money in the medical. Oh no, no, we won't pay for that. Where they can just
no, I'm sorry,
suffer.
They're
well,
actually we got, born.
That's right. Then forget
the
about
heck
it.
Heck with the born. Forget save the it. Unborn. The heck with the living. You know, these laws make us a little insane. And that why is that? Because in
they're
fact.
Crazy.
The laws are crazy. And I just got to say, they just keep coming at us. So please do a little reading about this week. We are out of time.
Stay informed and please stay positively revolted.
Wow, you wrapped it up really much faster than I was going to. Look, I was going to play out the clock for another
all
minute.
All right, go ahead.
Okay, I was just going to suggest that we all do our some research. Really check out feticide laws. They are frightening. Check out restrictions on abortion. Again, 205 restrictions passed in the years 2011 to 2013. That is more than in the previous decade. And that previous decade was more than the decade before that. Abortion is severely restricted in this country, though still legal. In that hypothetical way, though you might not be able to actually access one.
And we will continue this conversation on Facebook, folks.
Indeed, as we will continue the conversation on war on women in general, and not to mention Christian extremism, which is fueling this, I won't even say backlash, it's just sort of a continuation of women's oppression. Thank you very much for listening. And stay tuned for APA Compass. Follow us on Facebook, Positively Revolting, and in the Twitterverse, at Positive Revolt.
KBOO is proud to present a live broadcast of the Inner City Blues Festival, a benefit for Healthcare for All Oregon, from the North Portland Eagles Lodge, 7611 North Exeter at North Lombard in Portland, Saturday, April 11th from 6 p.m. to midnight. Hear live performances from such local blues and R&B luminaries as LaRonda Steele, Norman Sylvester Band, and many more. Again, that's the Inner City Blues Festival live broadcast and show on Saturday, April 11th from 6 p.m. to midnight. More information is available at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
I'm out to sing songs that will prove to you that this is your world, and that if it's hit you pretty hard and knocked you down for a dozen loops, no matter how hard it's run you down and rolled over you, no matter what